Hello and welcome. On behalf of CME Outfitters, I would like to welcome you and really thank you for joining us for the third in a series of three CMEO snacks titled Combating Vaccine Hesitancy, Having Effective, Meaningful, and Culturally Sensitive Conversations with Parents and Caregivers. The CMEO snack series is supported by an educational grant from Merck Sharp and Dome LLC, a subsidiary of Merck and Company Incorporated. My name is Gloria E. Barrera. I work as a certified school nurse at a public high school right outside of Chicago and also visiting clinical associate professor of nursing at UIC. I'm really committed to being a lifelong learner, and I continue, my efforts in improving child health outcomes in our most vulnerable populations through my current practice, advocacy, and teaching. I was recently appointed on the IDPH Diversity in Healthcare Professions Task Force, as well as the Governor's Illinois Terrorism Task Force for School Safety Committee. And I work closely with the Illinois chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics here in Illinois. And I'm joined today by my distinguished colleague, Robin Kogan. Robin?
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me to this important conversation. So yes, my name is Robin Kogan. I am a nationally certified school nurse, just about to finish my 23rd year in the Camden City School District. I've been a nurse for 39 years, so I've spent more than half of my career as a school nurse. I also teach part-time at Rutgers University in the School Nurse Certification Program. I'm very active nationally. I'm the director from New Jersey to the National Association of School Nurses. And I spend a lot of my, if there's any extra time, if you call it that, really focusing on child safety, gun violence prevention, and that has been a real focus of my work in recent years.
Thank you. So to frame the discussion today, I just want to quickly review our learning objective. So the goal is that after the CME snack, you will be able to integrate strategies to combat under vaccination patterns and improve the vaccination rates, particularly in those underserved pediatric patient populations. And then, just to quickly review what vaccine hesitancy is, and this is according to the World Health Organization, it refers to the delay in acceptance or refusal of safe vaccines despite availability of vaccination services. So, Ms. Kogan, if you could just tell us more about that.
Sure. Well, the interesting thing about vaccine hesitancy is it's on a continuum from refusing all vaccines to refusing but maybe being unsure to delaying, so refusing some, to accepting but not still sure that you will accept all. And ultimately, the goal is to accept all. But being unsure or hesitant about getting vaccines is clearly a very complicated issue, and it really varies depending on the time, the place, and even the specific vaccine. There are some key factors that influence whether someone will or will not be hesitant about vaccines. For example, it means someone may be undecided or uncertain about getting vaccinated before making a final decision. And that's the time where we can come in and find out what those issues are and try to understand where our client, or the child, the parent is coming from. It is not a black and white, clear-cut issue because there's a range between fully accepting vaccines and then completely refusing them. So it's not a fixed behavior, and it can change over time with various factors. The reasons behind it are incredibly complex, from safety and effectiveness, the lack of trust in authorities, personal beliefs, and access issues. And vaccine hesitancy happens globally in both rich and poor countries, leading to lower vaccination rates and threatening public health, truthfully, against vaccine-preventable diseases across the globe. So the main idea is that vaccine hesitancy is a changeable state of uncertainty. It's not a flat refusal. So when we can address the reasons behind the hesitancy, it's important for that. That can lead to actually boosting vaccination rates.
So we know what vaccine hesitancy is, but next we're just going to look at some of the root causes of that hesitancy. We know that childhood immunizations have been effective in preventing death and disease that many parents today have not encountered, in the common years ago. And as a result, increasing number of parents believe that those vaccine preventable diseases are mild or natural, and then vaccines are no longer necessary. Looking at just the past 10 years, the number of parents refusing those vaccinations or choosing alternate vaccination schedules has increased, and we've seen that in the clinical setting as school nurses. Looking at the 5 C's model, we can see that it explains some of these contributing factors very well. If you could just discuss these with us, looking at the 5 C's model.
Sure. The 5C model really helps us explain the different factors that influence people's decisions about getting vaccinated or not. And it's this influence that we can also influence, because it goes beyond talking about vaccine confidence to covering a really broader range of reasons why someone might be hesitant or willing to get vaccinated. It's both ways. So there's the 5 C's of vaccine hesitancy. I'm going to start with the first one, which is confidence. So here's the question. How much do you trust that vaccines are effective and safe? How much do you trust the healthcare system that's providing the vaccines? And how much do you trust the motivations of policymakers who are deciding which vaccines are needed? Tough questions. And then there's complacency. Whether or not you perceive, as you had said before, Gloria, that the diseases that the vaccines prevent are actually low risk, whether you think getting vaccinated is really necessary at all to prevent those diseases, those are some things to think about. And then the constraints. Are they physically available and affordable in your geographic area? If vaccination services are happening, but you don't have transportation, is it really accessible to you? And if you can understand the information about vaccines based on language and health literacy. And then finally, if the vaccination process seems appealing and mostly convenient. The next one is really interesting to me. It's calculation. How much research did you seek out information about vaccines? And the studies show us that the more people research on their own, the more likely they are to find anti-vax information. And the final one is collective responsibility. What is your willingness to get vaccinated to contribute to herd immunity and actually protect others? And then seeing vaccination really as a responsibility, a personal responsibility to the community.
So when we look at the disparities that exist in childhood vaccination on the next slide, we know that school nurses are strongly positioned within, our communities to educate students, families, and school staff about the critical role that vaccines play in preventing diseases and really allowing students and staff to remain healthy and in school. There are some consistent findings when we look at disparities associated with childhood vaccination. Ms. Kogan, what can you tell us about those disparities?
Well, first I want to say that school nurses prevent disease, so we need to be present to make a difference. I do want to point out that this particular slide looks at vaccination coverage up to 24 months and at a specific time between 2016 and 2019. And what it showed in this particular study was that there were disparities in vaccination rates among different groups of children. For example, non-Hispanic white children tended to have higher vaccination rates compared to other racial and ethnic groups. Children from higher income families had higher rates than those children who were living in poverty. And then privately insured children had higher rates than uninsured or publicly insured children. Children in urban areas tend to have higher rates than children in rural areas. But that gap between all of these different groups has actually decreased. We don't have that study right here, but I'd like to talk about it because the gap decreased specifically during COVID, when generally vaccine compliance and acceptance lowered across the board. And so it is frustrating for school nurses who play a key role in preventing diseases among students. And one of the major ways that we do this is ensuring that our students get required vaccinations. We follow state laws about which vaccinations students must have. We notify parents about need of vaccines. We follow up frequently with families. We work with community partners to provide access to vaccines. We certainly teach about vaccine safety and effectiveness. We document endlessly which students need vaccines, have received vaccines, and we certainly help families find missing immunization records. We provide them if we have access to an immunization registry, but we will get into that discussion. But despite all of these efforts, there are still disparities in vaccination rates. So we continue our best to push, not push, but to discuss the importance of vaccination and help parents make that very important decision.
Yeah, as you noted, you know, vaccine hesitance is a public health issue that we on the front line, school nurses, often address in our practice. And it has become even more prevalent during the recent pandemic, as you noted. We know that vaccine compliance among school children is essential to the health of an entire community, given that many pediatric illnesses are vaccine preventable. School nurses are involved in the promotion of vaccines in any given school district, but like you mentioned, we do have to be there first. And as we provide, you know, the health education to students and families, we are responsible for that vaccine surveillance. Promoting vaccine compliance as a matter of public health can be challenging for school nurses, especially if a community holds strong beliefs regarding the necessity of pediatric vaccines. So we know that there are disparities associated with childhood vaccinations, but what are some of the root causes of these disparities and how do they relate to vaccine hesitancy? If we can just discuss that next.
Sure. So it's interesting. I think one part of this conversation is looking at vaccine exemptions. They vary across all 50 states. Some allow for medical exemptions, some allow for religious exemptions. 15 states and DC allow for philosophical exemptions. Only 5 states allow solely medical exemptions. And school nurses have noticed an increase in parents claiming exemptions to avoid vaccinating their children over time. It's definitely increased since COVID. And this spread, truthfully, of misinformation during COVID raised concerns about future widespread refusal of many recommended vaccines. There's at least 14 childhood illnesses that were eradicated because of vaccines, and 15 if you include COVID. So, you know, candidates running for office who are publicly opposing vaccine mandates have influence. It's important for families to have access to accurate information about the safety and effectiveness of the vaccines, because that's often part of the root cause of their concern, their refusal. School nurses have frequent contact with students. We are the trusted source of health information for parents, and we can access those state immunization registries. What we really need is for them to be connected so that when our students move from state to state, we can have access to their prior history. The other thing I think we have to also ask is, where do we stand? Where do healthcare providers stand in our own belief about vaccination? It's hard to be the one to talk about vaccine confidence and promoting vaccine if we ourselves have questions. And I have noticed that within the school nurse community, especially during COVID. When schools employ nurses, we know that rates of vaccine exemptions are lower. We know that for a fact. A 2019 survey found that 18% of school nurses actually administer vaccines ourselves. 98% monitor student compliance through vaccine requirements, having those important conversations, and then really sticking to the guidelines that are mandated for students to be able to attend school. And then 41% of school nurses collaborate with outside partners to help students get required and recommended vaccines. So successful school vaccination compliance efforts require really strong policies supporting school nurse work and clearing procedures for notifying parents about vaccine requirements. When we talk about what's required, when we, you know, come from a place of this is going to happen, this is required for your student to stay safe, there is a higher increase in vaccine compliance, especially when school districts follow through with their mandates. So communications have to be tailored to families' health literacy levels. This is very important, to languages that are spoken in the house, and to the individual family culture. Multiple methods like emails, texts, calls may be needed to ensure compliance. And not all school nurses can directly provide vaccines through Vaccine for Children program, but in higher areas with higher compliance, like where I am in the Northeast, we partner with our federally qualified healthcare centers and our pharmacies so parents can easily access childhood vaccines when they're notified of noncompliance. We have great partners in community health centers and urgent cares who can offer no to low cost vaccines. And that's part of our job of care coordination, providing parents with the information of where they can get these vaccines, or better yet, having school-located vaccine clinics right in your schools. So during COVID, for example, nurses ran drive-through vaccine clinics, partnered with health departments to operate school-located vaccine clinics. And truthfully, schools have held clinics since the 1800s. It is very common that schools hold these health fairs specifically around vaccination. It's only since COVID that it became a little bit more controversial, that we're still trying to unravel why all of that has happened. So the National Association recognizes that preventing vaccine-preventable diseases is a core role for school nurses. We've partnered with immunization managers. NASM's even provided a toolkit on how to run a school-located vaccine clinic during COVID. It includes checklists and procedures, and we have lots of resources to share because school nurses work directly in the community, building those trusting relationships with students, with families, and with staff, because what we need to do is to get to the root cause of why the hesitancy exists.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, here in Illinois, the Illinois Association of School Nurses partnered with the Illinois chapter of American Academy of Pediatrics to create a toolkit that targeted, you know, vaccine hesitancy during the pandemic. And our collaboration with them, our partnership with them continues, and it all stemmed from that toolkit. And, you know, a lot of great things are happening with that continued partnership.
And I do want to say, I'm sorry, one thing, Gloria, before you go on. You had a previous partnership with the AAP, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the key here. I think a lot of us had these relationships were already pretty solid in our community. So when we had this emergency, we actually could turn to our community partners and say, let's do this together. What can we do to bring vaccine to our school districts? To literally drive, we have drive-through vaccine clinics. We have vans that come into the community. I mean, the innovation that's happened around vaccination has been one of the highlights of the very low lights of the last few years, for sure.
Yeah, and I think it is leveraging those relationships that school nurses can continue to look at when there's innovation that needs to be made. So yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I think when we're looking at just behavior change, though, it is critical that you know that happens for there to be effective healthcare. But the ultimate final decision to become healthier is that of the patient and not really the practitioner, so not really the school nurse. And we know that patient adoption of a new healthy behavior, the cessation of an unhealthy behavior, or the commitment to adhere to medical advice is central to effective medical care and really difficult to achieve. And that's where we're going to talk about next, motivational interviewing. It runs on a sound understanding of behavior change principles. And when we're looking at motivational interviewing as it relates to combat vaccine hesitancy, what are some other communication strategies that we can use?
So there's something called the RULE, and it's an acronym that represents four guiding principles of motivational interviewing. The R in RULE stands for resist the writing reflex. Avoid that natural tendency, and this is hard for nurses, to jump in and try to fix the person or give direct advice and solutions. Instead, let the person explore their own motivations for change. Let them really think it through. Be their guide, but be a real active listener. And then the U stands for understand the motivations. Understand the patient's motivations. In our case, it's most likely the parents, and seek to understand their perspective, their values, their motivations for change through that reflective listening, open-ended questions, and then avoid imposing our own motivations or reasons for that change. Many times I have seen that parents were motivated to have their children vaccinated when their vaccine concerns were addressed. It seemed to be a familial pattern. And then the L is listen, and nurses are excellent at listening with empathy. Using that reflective listening, demonstrate that you may not fully understand their experiences or their thoughts, but you're validating them without judgment, because that builds rapport and trust, because people don't feel judged. That really shuts down a conversation, right? And then the E is empower the patient, empower the student. Some students, depending on your state, can choose vaccination, even if their parents are against it, if they've reached a certain age. So support the person's autonomy and self-efficacy by expressing confidence in their ability to make a change, to make their own choices. Try to use those empowering words. And certainly, at all costs, avoid confrontation or even coercion. So these four principles really are the spirit of motivational interviewing. It's collaborative, person-centered, and it evokes the person's own motivations and commitment to change, rather than imposing change through confrontation or even advice giving.
There is one more model that we can use when we discuss vaccines with parents and families who are hesitant. So if we can just look at the case model next.
Sure. So this case method is very interesting. It provides this kind of structured approach for healthcare providers to communicate with patients and address their concerns about vaccines effectively through this four-step process. So the first one is corroborate, acknowledging the patient's concerns and finding points of agreement. Where is the overlap? Where are we both on the same page? Because that sets a respectful tone and that opens communication. For example, you can say something like, I understand there's a lot of conflicting information online about vaccines. Can I help you weed through it? Can we look at some together? Really, you know, showing them that there's lots of information out there, but do we know the source? And then about me is the second one. Describe your expertise and how you've built your knowledge base on the topic. For instance, you can say, I regularly attend, you know, National Association of School Nurse conferences. I read my evidence-based journals. I read and stay up to date on the latest vaccine research. I work with my local chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. This is an important topic for me. My family members come to me to seek out information. And then science. Explain that the scientific evidence shows, translate that scientific evidence using clear and plain language. You know, for example, studies demonstrate that COVID vaccines are highly effective at preventing severe illness and hospitalization and death from the virus, and that very few vaccinated people who do get infected typically experience milder symptoms when they have been vaccinated. That kind of information, and I think we also have to say that science is not static. You know, it changes. Science is always learning, so we're always updating based on the latest research that we're keeping on top of. And explain and advise. So provide your strong recommendation based on scientific evidence. Like, that's why I got vaccinated myself. I'm a certain age. I was concerned about my husband. We're having a grandchild. And I strongly recommend that you get your COVID vaccine today, or whatever the vaccination is of at the moment. COVID just is such a strong example to protect yourself and also protect your loved ones. When you make it about how they will benefit, I think that is a very powerful conversation. So the case method, you know, it lets healthcare providers address concerns with empathy, establish our credibility, which thankfully school nurses really have credibility with our families that we work with all the time. And then we can present scientific facts, simply translate that science, make a clear recommendation, and that increases a patient's confidence in vaccines. Storytelling from a trusted messenger like school nurses or other healthcare workers is powerful in making the case for vaccines and addressing misinformation and truly disinformation.
Yeah, using the case model is what we did through the Illinois Association of School Nurses to advocate for, you know, for vaccine uptake of the COVID vaccine when it first was available to everyone. And we know that having those conversations with parents can be quite difficult when they have reservations about any one or all vaccinations. And I guess, how should school nurses approach conversations with parents, do you think? If we can just talk about the presumptive approach to immunization communication.
Yeah, this is really interesting because language is so important. How we frame these discussions is vitally important. And people do respond different ways to how we frame things. So, for example, when healthcare providers talk about vaccines, it can be effective to assume, right, that parents plan to vaccinate their child. That's the presumptive approach. We would hope that all parents plan to vaccinate their child. So that is kind of the underlying definition of the presumptive approach. Instead of asking parents their thoughts, the healthcare provider states which vaccines a child needs that day, framing the vaccination as the default option, that this is what we're doing. So for example, examples of presumptive language, your child needs DTaP, Hib, and hepatitis today, instead of what do you want to do about the shots, right? Those are completely opposite conversations. We have to do some shots is one thing, instead of asking how do you feel about vaccines today? That probably will not get you the end result that you're looking for. And the evidence shows that those presumptive declarative statements, that approach works. Studies show that when healthcare providers use that language, like what I discussed with parents, they're more likely to accept vaccines compared to having open-ended discussions. And I think we can find this true in school. There are families have to meet certain vaccine criteria to be able for their child to be able to attend school. And I have to say, even though there is religious exemption in New Jersey, and also medical with if it's warranted, and very little is warranted anymore, in my 23 years of school nursing, I literally have had a handful of families that had true religious reasons for not wanting their children vaccinated. Most of the time, it was to avoid a certain vaccine. Parents use, in some cases, religious exemption for conscientious objection, which we do not have in New Jersey. And I'll give you an example. In New Jersey, we're one of the few states that requires the flu shot for children 6 months to 59 months who are in daycare or preschool. It is fascinating to me how many families decide to become religious just around the flu shot. So having these presumptive conversations, being very declarative about what's required, has brought our religious objection rate down quite a bit. So I find this very helpful and very interesting. And then you can pivot to other strategies like motivational interviewing if parents are still voicing hesitancy about vaccination.
We learned about different strategies to discuss vaccines with parents and families, but what should these conversations actually look like? Let's talk about that next and then really give participants some tips.
Sure. Well, let's face it, words matter significantly when we're promoting vaccine confidence and addressing vaccine hesitancy. And then based on provided search results, there are some key points of effective language that we can use. We have to avoid judgmental language. So, you know, we should use words more like benefits versus consequences. Getting the vaccine will help keep your child safe versus getting the vaccine is the right thing to do. Your family versus your community. Make it very personal. Medical experts versus science or health experts. Medical researchers versus drug companies. Use the word safety more than you use the word security. Use that less. Pharmaceutical companies versus drug companies. Vaccination. Use that more versus injection because people immediately think of the needle and then hesitate. And then look at, from an American standpoint, America's leading experts versus the world's leading experts, because it makes it much more personal and closer to home. So avoiding judgmental phrases like calling someone an anti-vaxxer, that will never work when referring to those hesitant about vaccines. Instead, acknowledge their concerns in a non-confrontational way. So avoid moralizing language like it's the right thing to do, as it can come across as you're lecturing and you're judging. And then focus on the benefits, the safety, and the return to normalcy, let's say during COVID. And then we have to tailor messages for specific audiences. Messages do need to be tailored for different racial, ethnic groups, age groups, political leanings, and other segments based on their motivations and concerns. Emphasize benefits over risks and focus on the benefits of vaccination, like it's protecting your family, community, and enabling, let's say with COVID, a return to more normal activities. Avoid overemphasizing potential side effects. If addressing risks, which we sometimes do, provide reassuring statistics and note that mild side effects are normal. That was one big lesson of COVID. People didn't realize. People would always say, oh, I can't get the flu shot because it gives me the flu. No, your body was actually doing what your body was meant to do. It was actually building the antibodies. And I think that was a huge positive message through COVID. Yes, many times when we got the COVID vaccine, we did feel it, but you felt it, but you knew it was working for the right reason. And that's what we have to keep reminding people. That means your body's doing exactly what it needs to do. And then refer to scientists and health experts and researchers behind the vaccine development. Refer to the people rather than the institutions. That didn't go well. And then respected medical professionals and community leaders, school nurses, are often more trusted as messengers than politicians. Let's face it, they should not be in these discussions. Use relatable stories and the voice. And then in summary, using that non-judgmental language, tailoring messages, focus on benefits, elevating the trusted messengers, high school nurses and high pharmacists too, incorporating community voices. Arts can improve vaccine confidence across diverse audiences. We have to get much more innovative about how we have these conversations and who are those credible messengers.
When we're looking at, you know, as school nurses, the approach of vaccination, we really have to look at it from a well-rounded perspective. So we'll discuss the school nursing practice framework next and how it integrates into vaccination in our school children. School nursing is a unique nursing specialty that benefits from a practice framework, and it aids, you know, school nurses in explaining and accomplishing their role, especially as it relates to vaccination uptake. So if you could just discuss that for our participants.
So first of all, school nurses can build trust with families through many different venues. When we talk about the school nursing practice framework, there's a brand new refresh one, which is really exciting, that we encourage all school nurses to look at on the NASN website. There's phenomenal articles about it. There's a great video to watch. It is a refresh framework with a great new name. And when I think about all of the components, the principles are the same. But when you look at what we've done around vaccine, especially through COVID, you know, that the family and school and the communities at the center of every decision we made and everything we did, certainly the community public health, the leadership that we stepped forward with. And I'm sure you know, Gloria, I say that every single school nurse is the chief wellness officer in their building. Even if we don't have that official title, we deserve it. We do it. The care coordination piece of vaccine, working through vaccine hesitancy, and then quality improvement, always improving what we're providing to our families. So given all of that, I can plug in certain things that we can recommend. Educational sessions, organizing informational sessions and workshops to educate our families about the importance and the safety of vaccines. Who better to tell than ourselves and our trusted community partners? Make those communications personalized. Provide individualized consultations to address specific concerns and questions. We know that one-on-one conversations with a trusted messenger like a school nurse can change someone's on that vaccine hesitancy continuum. It can change the trajectory and it can have a really terrific outcome. And then accessibility, being readily available. I know this is hard. We have many of us have multiple buildings and thousands of kids, but being available to discuss vaccines and provide reliable information. We are the trusted messenger. We have to make sure that we're providing correct information. And then community engagement, participating in community events always builds rapport with families, and that promotes vaccine acceptance because that's the goal. And then of course, collaborating with other healthcare providers, working closely with our local healthcare providers to ensure that we're all providing the consistent and accurate vaccine messaging. So what's been effective interventions that have been proven to increase vaccine compliance among students, several that come to mind that I know other school nurses have done also, and I just want to go through them very quickly. That school-based vaccine program offering vaccines directly in school can increase accessibility, decrease barriers to vaccine, and it's a huge convenience. It's a time saver for students and parents. I want to say one thing about that. I think we have to look at when we get parental consent, can we do these vaccinations without the parent present if we have parental consent and we know it's signed by the parent? There are some states that are doing that. If I remember correctly, the state of Maine is doing that, and they have much higher vaccine compliance in school vaccine clinics because they're not expecting the parent to be there. Just wanted to say that. Reminders and recalls, implementing systems to remind parents about upcoming vaccinations and following up on missed appointments. This is where that immunization registry comes not only in handy, but it's a lifeline for me as a school nurse. I'm on that immunization registry every single day. And it would be, we have an interface between our New Jersey immunization registry and our electronic medical record. What we don't have is a direct line to be able to electronically communicate with our healthcare providers. That might be a really interesting topic for another day, though. We did incentive programs, providing small incentive gift cards, rewards for students who come to the vaccine clinic, who are up to date on their vaccines. Of course, educational campaigns, conducting these comprehensive educational campaigns that provide clear, factual information about the benefits and the safety. That's what we want to focus on. And then the big one, the tough one, this is the most important one, is enforcing the policies that your school has. When you enforce school entry vaccination requirements to ensure that students are vaccinated before attending class, that's the key. So addressing all of these multifaceted reasons with vaccine hesitancy and implementing these strategies truly increases vaccine compliance and ultimately the goal, right, our kids to be healthy, safe, and ready to learn, but it also protects public health, the general health and well-being of the community.
I think it's important to note that when school nurses practice to the full extent of their education, their training, and their licensure based on where they're at, in a manner that's consistent with the principles of standards of practice and with a mindset that includes those four practice principles that you just went over, and we can see that on the screen, it really does lead to improved, you know, positive student health outcomes. So it really is a win-win for everyone. From a school perspective, there are many topics that should be considered if we are to improve vaccine perspectives in parents. So let's just visit some of those issues.
Yeah, so I mean, if there's barriers to vaccination, which we know there are, what we did in our district, and we've been, and throughout the state of New Jersey too, we've had really wonderful relationships with our health department, our local health department, our federally qualified healthcare centers. There's a health system called Virtua that has a children's pediatric mobile van that comes on site to deliver vaccination. They also do physicals on site, and this is free to our families. So we try to lower the barriers of missed work. Many of my families, I work in an underserved population with a high immigration population. It is a city that has many years of struggling. Many families live below the poverty line, and the barriers are things like families don't necessarily have jobs that have sick days associated with them. So what can we do to make things as convenient as possible? That's why I brought up that issue of, do we have to have the family member there if we have a signed consent? It was like an aha moment for me when I heard about what was happening in Maine, because we've made this rule, but is it really necessary? And what can we do to lower the barriers for families to comply? Because if we're only having vaccine clinics either at drop off or pickup, we're not really getting to all the families that need. But we know that we have kids with us all day, every day. So that was a real eye opener for me. And the role of school administration, I can't stress this enough. If we have protocols and policies, for example, why I don't want to unnecessarily have a child miss school because they don't have what they need. But the school does have a responsibility for community health, and we should be implementing those policies and procedures. Now, can we make it easier for families? Absolutely. That's the part I think we have to spend more time on, because we don't want to exclude students unnecessarily. I also believe that in almost 2025, we should be having bi-directional electronic communication with our healthcare providers so that we're not waiting for a family member to hand deliver a physical to us for a child to come to school. All of those kind of negative interactions do not build the relationships that we're looking to build. And then how do we make family-friendly efforts to vaccinate? We should also provide vaccinations in school for families. It should not just be for the child, right? One of my, that vaccine, that van that I was talking about, I shared before that our little preschoolers have to have the flu shot, and they have to have it by December 31st, or they cannot return to school in January. So that's pretty much like herding cats. And you can imagine that right before Christmas break, we could have 900, 1,000 kids that will be excluded come January. But this van has this brilliant idea. The van comes to my school. Now, again, the parents do have to be there. On the van, the kids are welcomed into this beautiful environment with bubbles and toys and all these things around them. And they hand the child a magic wand. And while they're taking the child's coat off to get the vaccine, they are blowing bubbles and asking the student, how many bubbles can you pop? And everyone counts together. 1, 2, 3. Great job. 4, 5, 6. The coat is off. 7, 8, 9. That vaccine is in and out. The child has no idea they just had a vaccine, and they walk out with a stuffed animal. It's amazing. I wish it was all across the country. So these are the kind of partnerships that we've created. We've created a great partnership with Rutgers University Camden School of Nursing, where I work in the school nurse certificate program, to bring vaccinations, to bring physicals to our students. It can be done, but school nurses have to be present to make a difference.
That's right. And we school nurses really are the leaders who use evidence-based immunization strategies that we already discussed, such as those school-located vaccine clinics, parent-guardian reminders about vaccine schedules, when we looked at communication strategies, and then the state immunization information systems that you just mentioned. For example, here in Illinois, it's iCare. And, you know, we are strongly supportive of vaccination recommendations and vaccine education for students, staff, and families. So if we can just summarize now with our SMART goals, those are that are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. We hope that our audience will take away from this presentation to apply to their practice, and they are listed on the screen, but it's to identify the components of vaccine hesitancy that negatively impact vaccination rates, recognize the disparities in childhood vaccination and contributing factors that exacerbate these disparities, and then positively affect childhood vaccination rates via effective communication to parents of the impact of delayed vaccination and declined vaccination on their children. This CMEO snack is one of a three-part series, and we hope that you'll take advantage of all of the short and focus activities in the series. Thank you again to Ms. Kogan for joining me, and thank you to our audience for participating and providing the best care for our students, our patients. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.